All right, welcome in everyone, ready for another deep dive? Today, we're tackling a really big issue, and a really complex one too. We're gonna look at the state of transgender rights here in the US as of right now, 2025.
It's definitely a moving target, that's for sure.
You said it. I mean, we've got stacks of research here, legal analyses, policy documents, public opinion polls, even a whole historical overview of how this movement has gotten to where it is. So yeah, complex is putting it mildly.
Definitely complex.
But that's what we're here for, right? To wade through it all and try to distill the most important takeaways, you know, help our listeners make sense of it all.
Absolutely. And I think one thing that jumps out right away, just from glancing at all this material, is this incredible tension that exists. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, we can't deny that there have been some real strides made in transgender rights, historically speaking.
Right.
But on the other hand, 2025 feels like, well, a huge step backwards. We're seeing this real push to roll back a lot of those hard-won gains. Mm-hmm. And it's coming from the top down, you know, at the federal level. But then at the same time, you've got all this restrictive legislation popping up in a lot of states. It creates this, I don't know, almost a sense of whiplash, like moving forward and backward at the same time.
It's a very polarized situation.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, it really does feel like we're at this kind of inflection point. And the impact of all these changes, it's so broad, you know, it's not just about legal technicalities. It's about people's lives. It's about whether transgender people are protected from discrimination in everyday life, whether they can access healthcare. We know that's a particularly critical issue, especially for young people. It affects their rights in schools, how they're treated in the criminal justice system, even whether or not the law recognizes their identities at the most basic level. It's a lot.
It is.
So maybe we can start by unpacking what's happening at the federal level, because that seems to be driving a lot of the changes we're seeing.
Absolutely. I think the most pivotal shift in federal policy came on January 20th of this year with that executive order that redefines sex in federal law.
Right.
Now, it's strictly binary, male or female, based entirely on the biological sex assigned at birth. So no more acknowledging gender identity, just biological sex. And that's huge. I mean, that's a fundamental shift in the federal government's understanding of who is protected under the law.
And it sounds like it really narrows the scope of what sex discrimination actually means, right?
Exactly. It's basically undoing years of progress in understanding that discrimination based on sex includes discrimination based on gender identity. And you see this rhetoric about gender ideology being extremist or, you know, dangerous. This idea that gender it's fixed, it's determined solely by biology.
Right. So this isn't just a semantic argument, is it? These are real words with real consequences.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this redefinition has real teeth. Federal agencies are now required to use sex instead of gender in all their official documents and policies.
Yeah.
They have to actively remove anything that promotes this so-called gender ideology.
So give us a concrete example. What does this look like in practice?
Well, for one, think about government-issued IDs, like passports.
Right.
Those will now only reflect the biological sex assigned at birth. No more option to change it to align with your gender identity.
Wow.
But it goes even deeper than that. This could impact everything from employment to housing to healthcare to education. Anywhere that anti-discrimination laws are in place, this redefinition could be used to undermine protections for transgender people.
So potentially all those areas where we've seen progress in recognizing gender identity, those gains could be rolled back.
Exactly. And there's even this explicit attempt to limit the application of the Bostock v. Clayton County Supreme Court decision. Remember that landmark ruling? It established that discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity is a form of sex discrimination under Title IX.
Huge victory for LGBTQ plus rights.
It was. But now the argument is being made that Bostock, while it applies to the workplace, doesn't extend to single-sex spaces like bathrooms or locker rooms. So that's another significant limitation.
Yeah, really trying to narrow the scope of that ruling. And it's important to remember this wasn't the only action taken at the federal level, right?
Oh, right. It's part of a pattern. I mean, just a day later, on January 21st, another executive order revoked non-discrimination protections for LGBTQ plus federal employees and people working for federal contractors. That undoes years of work to create a more inclusive federal workforce, and it directly targets those diversity, equity, and inclusion programs.
DEI.
Exactly. Mm. And then, of course, there's the military ban.
Right. The ban on transgender individuals serving openly in the military. That was reinstated just a few days later.
Yeah, January 27th. Citing concerns about medical interventions, readiness, you know, basically arguing that transgender people are somehow unfit to serve. But it's interesting, isn't it? Because we have ample evidence of openly transgender individuals serving with distinction before the ban.
It seems to fly in the face of that evidence.
Yeah. And, you know, to really understand what's driving all of these changes at the federal level, you have to look at Project 2025.
Project 2025. This keeps coming up.
Right. It's this comprehensive policy agenda put together by a coalition of conservative organizations. And our sources make it clear, this is about systematically dismantling LGBTQ plus rights, rolling back those DEI programs, and redefining sex discrimination so narrowly that it excludes gender identity altogether.
So it's like a blueprint.
Yeah, like a roadmap for how to achieve these goals.
And it sounds pretty radical.
It is. I mean, their stated objectives include things like completely eliminating the terms sexual orientation and gender identity from all federal rules, regulations, contracts, grants, you name it. They want to restrict access to transgender health care across the board through Medicare, Medicaid, even for service members. And that includes care for adults, not just minors.
So this isn't just about protecting children or whatever the rhetoric is. This is about limiting access to care for everyone.
It seems to be, yes. They also want to roll back inclusive policies in education, potentially going so far as to shut down the Department of Education altogether. And on the international stage, they're advocating for a complete shift in American diplomacy, opposing any efforts to advance LGBTQ plus rights globally.
That's a really ambitious agenda, to put it mildly. And it sounds like those executive orders we talked about, those are just the first steps.
Exactly.
So what about the states? What are we seeing at the state level in terms of transgender rights?
Well, it's a mixed bag, but there's definitely a trend towards more and more restrictions, especially in certain areas. One of the biggest flashpoints right now is gender-affirming care for minors.
Right. We've seen a lot of headlines about that.
Yeah. It's been a huge focus of legislative activity. As of January 2025, at least 26 states have now enacted some form of ban on this type of care for minors. And in six of those states, it's been criminalized. We're talking felony charges for doctors who provide this care, and even for parents who support their kids in accessing it. It's really scary.
It is. And what kind of care are these bans targeting specifically?
Usually puberty blockers, hormone therapy, and surgeries. Basically, any medical intervention that helps transgender youth align their bodies with their gender identity.
So are we seeing any pushback against this at the state level? Are there any states that are trying to protect this care?
Oh, yeah, definitely. There are 14 states plus D.C. that have these shield laws in place.
Shield laws?
Yeah, they're designed to protect access to gender-affirming care. And then two other states have similar protections through executive orders. So you've got this real split in the country. It literally depends on where you live, whether or not you can access this care. It creates this healthcare lottery.
A real patchwork of protections.
Exactly.
So beyond healthcare, what about the rights of transgender students in schools? It seems like that's another area where we're seeing a lot of action.
It is. We're seeing a huge wave of restrictive legislation targeting transgender students. 25 states now prohibit them from participating in school sports, consistent with their gender identity. And 15 states have these bathroom bills, you know, restricting which bathrooms they can use based on their sex assigned at birth. Some of those extend to other government buildings, too. And then there's the ongoing impact of those don't say gay or trans laws, which censor any discussion of LGBTQ plus topics in schools. Plus, you've got states requiring parental permission for name or pronoun changes, and even efforts to defund schools that are seen as supportive of transgender students.
Wow, it sounds like a very hostile environment in a lot of places. Are there any particular examples of states that are really leading the charge on this?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Iowa's a good example. Governor Reynolds signed a law removing gender identity as a protected class from their state Civil Rights Act. That means it's now legal to discriminate against transgender people in housing, employment, public accommodations, you name it. And the law goes even further, defining sex strictly as assigned at birth and saying that gender is the same thing as sex, explicitly rejecting the idea of gender identity. It's a very clear signal of where they stand. And they've got other anti-LGBTQ plus bills in the works, too.
So that's Iowa. What about other states?
Well, Texas is another one to watch. They're considering a bill that would make it a crime to, get this, commit gender identity fraud.
Gender identity fraud.
Basically, it would be illegal for a transgender person to use a name or pronouns that don't match their sex assigned at birth when interacting with government agencies or employers. You could actually face jail time and fines for that. It's crazy. And they've got another bill trying to restrict bathroom use based on your original birth certificate, even if you've legally changed your gender marker. And then you got Governor Abbott. He's been really vocal about rejecting what he calls woke gender ideologies. He's even directed state agencies to do the same. Plus, there's talk of restricting gender markers on documents even further and cutting funding for gender-affirming surgery for adults.
Wow. Gender identity fraud. That's a really chilling concept. So are there other states kind of following in Iowa and Texas's footsteps?
Yeah, unfortunately. Alabama passed a law defining sex and gender very narrowly, really emphasizing that binary view. Arkansas is going after DEI programs in higher education and trying to block funding for anything related to gender-affirming care or abortion. And Wisconsin, well, their legislature is just churning out all these bills targeting transgender people. They want to ban them from sports, from getting gender-affirming care, even from changing their names and pronouns at school. It's relentless.
It's a lot to keep track of, and it's a lot to process, honestly, but it sounds like there's a lot of pushback happening too, right? I mean, are these federal and state laws just going unchallenged?
Oh, definitely not. There's a lot of action in the courts right now. All those federal executive orders we talked about, those have faced immediate legal challenges from all sides. Organizations, individuals, everyone's filing lawsuits. They're arguing that these orders are discriminatory, that they violate constitutional rights, that they're an overreach of executive power, and in some cases, they're actually winning. Federal judges have granted temporary restraining orders and preliminary injunctions, blocking some of the worst provisions from taking effect, especially when it comes to that funding for gender-affirming care for minors, so there's definitely some hope there.
That's good to hear. What about the legal challenges to the state laws? Are those having any success?
Yeah, some of them. There's a really big case before the Supreme Court right now, LW v. Scrimeti, which is challenging Tennessee's ban on gender-affirming care for minors. It's important because it's the first time the Supreme Court's weighing in on these types of bans. And it's also interesting because the federal government's position has flipped under the new administration. The Department of Justice is now arguing that the Tennessee law doesn't violate the Constitution.
Wow, so they're actually defending a law that restricts access to care.
Yeah, it's a big shift. But the petitioners in the case, they're arguing that the law discriminates against transgender youth based on both sex and transgender status. So it's going to be really interesting to see how the Supreme Court rules on this one. We're also seeing challenges to care and sports bans in other states, like Idaho. And there have been some victories. A court in Ohio blocked their ban on gender-affirming care, saying it was likely unconstitutional. And in Montana, a court actually struck down a bill that tried to define sex in strictly binary terms, saying it violated equal protection and privacy rights. So it's not all bad news.
It sounds like a real legal tug-of-war is going on. Are there any existing legal precedents that are still holding strong despite these challenges?
Yeah, one of the biggest ones is Bostock v. Clayton County. You know, that's the Supreme Court decision from 2020 that said discrimination based on gender identity is a form of sex discrimination.
Right, we talked about that earlier.
Well, even though the current administration is trying to limit its scope, that core precedent is still incredibly important. It's a powerful tool for challenging these discriminatory laws.
So Bostock is still relevant. Good to know. So let's talk about healthcare access specifically. We've touched on the bans for minors, but what's the broader impact of all these policy changes on the transgender community?
Well, that federal executive order, the one with that really inflammatory title, Protecting Children from Chemical and Surgical Mutilation, that's a big one.
Yeah, that title is really something.
It is. And it's a pretty clear indication of their stance. That order aims to restrict access to gender-affirming care for anyone under 19 nationwide. And it does it in a couple of ways. First, it redefines this care using language that's really dehumanizing and stigmatizing. Then it tries to cut off federal funding for it. So programs like Medicaid, Medicare, TRICARE, the Federal Employee Health Benefits Program, they'd all be barred from covering this care. And there's even talk of reinterpreting Section 1557 of the Affordable Care Act, which prohibits discrimination in healthcare. They want to remove the explicit protections for LGBTQ plus people. Plus, the order instructs the DOJ to draft legislation that would allow people to sue healthcare providers for care they received as minors, even years later.
Wow, that's a lot. So what's been the immediate fallout from all of this?
Well, we're already seeing hospitals halting care, canceling appointments. Even though some of these policies haven't even been fully implemented yet, the fear and confusion are causing real harm.
It sounds like a nightmare for transgender youth and their families. And what about those state-level bans we talked about? What are those looking like on the ground?
They're devastating. They're not just restricting access to care. They're criminalizing it in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
And the impact on mental health is huge. We're seeing increased anxiety, depression, suicidality among transgender youth and their families. And that's tragic because research shows that gender-affirming care can actually reduce suicide risk.
So it's literally life-saving care that's being denied.
It is. And, you know, beyond the legal ramifications, there's this climate of fear that's been created. We're seeing what's being called overcompliance, where hospitals and clinics are halting even more services than they're legally required to, just to avoid any potential legal trouble. It's creating this chilling effect on healthcare access.
So the focus seems to be very much on minors with a lot of these policies. What about transgender adults? Are they being impacted by all of this as well?
Oh, absolutely. While that federal order targets minors specifically, the rhetoric and the overall policy shifts are definitely having an impact on adults, too. I mean, Project 2025 explicitly calls for eliminating transgender healthcare coverage in Medicare and Medicaid, which would affect everyone. And at the state level, we're seeing bans on insurance exclusions for trans-related care and restrictions on Medicaid coverage. So it's not just about youth, it's about limiting access for the entire transgender community.
It's really concerning. So let's talk a bit more about the impact on transgender students specifically. We've touched on the sports bans and the bathroom bills, but what are some of the broader federal policies that are affecting them in schools?
There's this executive order that's really focused on what they call radical indoctrination in K-12 schools.
Radical indoctrination, that's loaded language.
It is. Basically, they're trying to defund schools that support transgender students in any way. Recognizing their gender identity, using their chosen names and pronouns, allowing them to use the bathroom or locker room that aligns with their gender, letting them participate in sports consistent with their gender, all of that is now under attack. And they're putting a huge emphasis on parental rights, even going so far as to say that schools are deliberately concealing information from parents if they don't disclose a student's gender identity or their wishes regarding names and pronouns. It's scary because it could lead to forced outing of these kids. And they're even talking about taking legal action against teachers and administrators who are supportive of transgender students.
Wow, it sounds like they're really trying to create a hostile environment for these kids. And what about on the financial aid front? Are there any federal policies impacting that?
Yeah, the Department of Education has removed the non-binary option from the FAFSA form, so students are forced to choose male or female based on their Social Security records. And the Social Security Administration has stopped processing gender marker changes, too. So that creates a real catch-22 for non-binary and transgender students. They can't get financial aid without choosing a gender that doesn't match who they are, and they can't change their gender marker with the SSA.
That's a huge barrier. So what are the states doing beyond those sports bans and bathroom bills that we talked about earlier? Are there any other policies that are specifically targeting transgender students?
Yeah, we talked about those don't say gay or trans laws. Those are still in effect in several states. And Wisconsin is really going after trans kids hard. They're trying to ban them from sports, block access to gender-affirming care, even require parental permission for name and pronoun changes. So it's a really tough landscape in a lot of places. But there are some bright spots. Some states are really doubling down on their commitment to protecting trans students. New York, for example, has reaffirmed their protections for bathroom and locker room use, sports participation, all of that. And they've made it clear that gender identity and expression are protected categories in their anti-discrimination laws for schools.
So there's some resistance happening. It's good to hear that not every state is going down this road. So let's shift gears a little bit and talk about the experiences of transgender individuals in the criminal justice system. This is an area that often gets overlooked, but it's really important. What are the key federal policies in place right now?
Well, unfortunately, there's been a really significant backslide at the federal level when it comes to how transgender people are treated in prisons. There's an executive order that now requires federal prisons to house transgender women in men's facilities. And it also removes those crucial anti-rape protections for transgender inmates from the Prison Rape Elimination Act guidelines. On top of that, it cuts off federal funding for gender-affirming care for incarcerated individuals.
That's incredibly dangerous.
It is. In response to this order, the Bureau of Prisons has issued new guidelines that basically erase trans people's identities. Staff are required to use an inmate's legal name and pronouns that correspond to their sex assigned at birth, even if that's not how they identify, and they've banned clothing requests that don't align with that assigned sex. They are, however, allowing the continuation of hormone therapy that was already in progress, which is something, I guess.
It's a small consolation, but at least it's something. Are these policies being challenged in court?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Transgender inmates are filing lawsuits arguing that these policies are discriminatory and violate the law. And they're having some success. Some courts have granted temporary restraining orders, blocking transfers to men's facilities, and ensuring that they can continue receiving care.
So there is some legal recourse available. What about at the state level? Are there any state level policies that are particularly concerning when it comes to transgender people in prison?
Yeah, Texas is considering a bill that would prevent prisons from accepting transgender inmates altogether. And Iowa has a bill that would ban transgender women from being housed in women's prisons. And these policies are really just part of a larger trend of what's being called the transgender criminal legal nexus, where transgender and gender nonconforming people are being increasingly targeted by the criminal justice system.
So it's like a double whammy. They're more likely to be incarcerated, and then they face further discrimination and abuse once they're in the system.
Exactly. And when you add in Project 2025's push to define gender solely based on sex assigned at birth, it paints a very grim picture for the future of transgender rights within the criminal justice system.
It does. So let's talk about the broader issues of discrimination, violence, and safety faced by transgender people. What's the current situation?
It's really alarming. The ACLU is tracking literally hundreds of anti-LGBTQ plus bills across the country right now. And that translates into real-world discrimination. We know that transgender people face much higher rates of violence than the general population. Data from the Williams Institute shows that they're over 4 times more likely to experience violent victimization. And that's backed up by the National Transgender Discrimination Survey, which found that discrimination affects nearly every aspect of trans people's lives, from losing jobs to being denied housing to being harassed in public.
And it seems like the more visible transgender people become, the more they're targeted.
Yeah, sadly, that's often the case. Visibility can lead to backlash. And with all this anti-trans legislation and rhetoric out there, it's creating a really dangerous climate.
And violence against transgender people is a huge problem, right? We hear about these horrific murders all the time.
It's true. It's heartbreaking. Over 24 trans people are killed every year in the U.S., and most of those murders involve guns. In 2023 alone, there were at least 35 reported homicides of trans and gender expansive people in the U.S. and Puerto Rico, and 80% of those involved guns.
Wow, that's a staggering number. And who's most affected by this violence?
It disproportionately impacts trans women of color, especially black trans women. And the South is particularly dangerous. You know, we've talked about some of the state laws that are contributing to this hostile environment, but it goes beyond that. There's so much hate speech out there, online and offline. Healthcare providers who offer gender-affirming care are being harassed and threatened. It's a really scary time to be trans in this country.
It really is. So with all this happening, what's the state of public opinion on transgender rights? Are people becoming more accepting or more hostile?
Well, some recent polls paint a pretty mixed picture. A Pew Research Center survey from February 2025 found that there's actually growing support for restricting transgender rights. More people now support things like requiring trans athletes to compete based on their sex assigned at birth, banning gender-affirming care for minors, requiring people to use the bathroom that matches their sex assigned at birth, even banning schools from teaching about gender identity. And at the same time, support for things like non-discrimination protections and insurance coverage for trans healthcare has gone down. It's interesting, though, there's a pretty big partisan divide on these issues. Republicans are much more likely to support these restrictive policies than Democrats.
So that polarization we talked about earlier is definitely reflected in public opinion. Are there any other interesting findings from these polls that you want to highlight?
Yeah, a Gallup poll from January 2025 showed that support for transgender people serving openly in the military has actually declined.
Mm-hmm.
And while most Americans acknowledge that discrimination against trans people exists, a slim majority still believe that changing gender is morally wrong. It's like there's this cognitive dissonance going on.
Yeah.
And a lot of people seem to think that politicians aren't really informed enough about these issues to be making policy decisions about them.
So a lot of uncertainty and conflicting views out there. So given this incredibly challenging landscape, what role are advocacy and activist groups playing in all of this?
They're doing incredible work. They're really the front line in the fight for trans rights. Groups like Advocates for Trans Equality, Trans Lifeline, the ACLU, Lambda Legal, and the Equality Federation, they're all working on different fronts, but they're all crucial. They're fighting these discriminatory laws in court. They're raising awareness. They're providing support to trans people who are struggling. They're lobbying for better policies. They're doing everything they can to push back against this tide of hate and fear.
What are some of the specific strategies they're using?
Well, legal challenges are obviously a big part of it. They're suing the government, both federal and state, over these discriminatory laws and policies. And they're also launching public awareness campaigns to educate people about trans issues and combat misinformation. They're providing direct support to trans people, connecting them with resources and helping them navigate this increasingly hostile world. and they're working to pass legislation that would actually protect trans people, like the proposed Transgender Bill of Rights. And they're doing all of this while facing immense pressure and threats. It's really inspiring to see their dedication and resilience.
It really is. So as we kind of wrap things up here, what do you see as the biggest challenges and potential future directions for trans rights in the U.S.?
Well, one of the most concerning things is the potential long-term impact of that federal redefinition of sex. It could have ripple effects that we haven't even fully grasped yet. It could affect everything from data collection to law enforcement to how trans people are treated in society as a whole. And then there's this trend towards criminalizing and erasing trans people, especially at the state level. They're trying to make it illegal to be trans, basically. And when you combine that with the efforts to restrict access to healthcare and education, it's a really bleak picture. But there's also this growing international movement for trans rights. Other countries are taking a much more progressive approach, and that gives me some hope.
So it's not all doom and gloom.
No, not at all. There's still a lot of fight left in the trans community and their allies. Mm. And the legal landscape is constantly shifting, so it's important to stay informed and to stay engaged.
So for our listeners out there, what are the key takeaways from this deep dive into transgender rights in 2025?
I think the biggest one is that we're at a crossroads. The U.S. is incredibly divided right now, and trans rights are at the center of that divide. We're seeing a real backlash against the progress that's been made, and it's coming from the highest levels of government. But there's also incredible resistance happening, both in the courts and on the streets. And ultimately, the future of trans rights in this country depends on what side wins out.
It's a pivotal moment, and it's a lot to think about. As you're processing all of this, we want you to consider this. How do these trends in trans rights reflect the broader state of civil rights and individual autonomy in the U.S.? And what responsibility do we all have as individuals to stay informed and to fight for a more just and equitable society? Those are the questions we want to leave you with. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.